Thank you. Good evening to you all. Thank you for joining. Actually, it's a great pleasure and a privilege to be here. Decaf Quest has grown to be a landmark in at least the regional and the local financial happening, and at the same time, philosophical knowledge beyond normal academia. And this is very interesting to know and to discover and to follow. Now, my talk today, my name is Ghassan Shammas, and I'm going to discuss with you what is commonly known as ethical investment. Now, ethical investment has several other names, nicknames, socially responsible investment that goes into it, corporate responsible investment or corporate and social responsibility goes into there, and many other things. Some people claim that Islamic finance goes into there, or ethical investment goes into Islamic finance. We will see what's the, we will just pass tangentially to see what's the difference, or probably where is the similarity. Now, the discussion the discussion topics are divided into two parts. The first part, I will try and make it very fast, because it's like, what is ethical finance or investment? What are the criteria? What are the filtering or screening that we apply, or performance, cost, diversification, and consultation? A few words. Topic two is most likely a subject of more discussion. Is the ethical, there is an ethical debate, is there such a thing as ethical investment? Probably I don't have the answer. Probably we can derive the answer together, because it's a normative thing. It's a value-based thing. Then we will see what can be done about this. What is ethical and what is non-ethical? And then, if ethical at all, ethical according to what? So, first, let me just frame, put the discussion in frame of definition. What is ethical investments? Two things. It's investment based on some rules that we define as ethics. And it's, we will discover that it is ethics according to something, probably according to my values, to your values, to the society's values. And we shall see or try to understand that what can we consider as ethical, say in our area, might not be considered ethical, say in Korea or in Japan or in Mongolia or in the US and vice versa. So it's an investment. So let's start with this. It is an investment. It is not a charity. It is an investment, which means I have capital. I need to put it in the market. I need to preserve my capital. I need to ensure liquidity and make good profit. However, I would like to consider my investment as compliant, I would say compliant to a certain set of rules or standards that I believe as an investor are ethical to me. Now, the first controversy, there is a consensus that socially responsible investment changes the design and the outcome of any investment process, of course, because you are subjecting your possible investment universe to a certain set of rules or filters or screens or whatever that are reducing the universe, the possible universe of investment. So the debates have centered on, there is a risk-return trade-off, because probably if you concentrate more, are you really concentrating or are you deconcentrating? We shall see. Investment decisions in this realm are in line with personal and organizational value. It's personal. This is terrible. When it is a personal value, what I think is ethical might be outrageously non-ethical to you or to somebody else. And this is where the whole story hinges. We believe, or I believe, say I am an investor and I have $1,000 I'm investing. I say, I want to invest this money in a certain venue or in a certain market that obeys a certain ethical rules that I put. And this becomes very personal. ethics and investment strategy should be fully aligned with my values, so as I can describe my portfolio or my investment as compliant. Now, when a fund, any fund or a group of investors or an individual investor applies his or its own ethical standards to investment decisions, these ethical standards usually outweigh the effect of risk and return. They outweigh it because it's more important. It's more important to be ethically compliant, and please take this with a pinch of salt, rather than, oh, I want a trade-off between risk and return, and then I call Markowitz, or I call Kwan, or I call whoever I want, and then I decide whether my investment is good or bad. First, I need to be compliant. Now, there is seemingly no clear cut. This is very important. There is seemingly no clear cut or intrinsic border between ethical or SRI criterion to describe an investment portfolio. You determine whether your investment is ethical or not is a judgment. It's a judgment, it's a description, right? That is not always based on neutral criteria and mostly characterized by rather subjective selection processes. It is subjective. So, okay, you can tell me, listen, what you're saying is not new. Even an investment, any investment, is a subjective decision in the sense that I have $1,000 in my pocket and it is completely subjectively oriented to decide to put my money on Microsoft, Bitcoin, Solidaire, or ExxonMobil, or whatever. So yes, it is. But then the selection process becomes more subjective when you dwell deep into a certain set of rules, risk and return, classical way of investing. Now, just this number, we believe that there is more than $40 trillion invested today in funds that are described or that claim to be, in a certain sense, belonging to an ethical criteria of admission of investment. Now, I shall move very fast. Just to tell you, the screening or the filters, they are usually either exclusionary. I mean, I exclude those companies or those stocks that are the point, or are inclusionary, we'll see it. And these are some of the screening criteria that are sometimes controversial, because some of them are controversial. These are exclusionary. I would not invest in a company that fosters or helps abortion or abortifacients, adult entertainment, alcohol, animal testing. Now, this animal testing thing is growing in the past 3-4 years. Not only testing, but I mean, if you deal with any animal or animal production or agropecuary production and you're dealing with the animals is not deemed ethical to a certain standard, you're banned from some investment universes. Contraceptives, controversial weapons like chemical weapon, electric weapon, nuclear weapons, whatever. Fur industry. Is becoming more and was growing to be more and more banned or shunned away. Gambling, casinos, lotteries, whatnot. Now, employment policy. Now we're sophisticating the thing more. I shall not invest in a company that does not treat gender at equality of quantity of people. I mean, proportion or payment criteria, whatnot. I shall not deal with a company employing kids or not employing or not being equitable vis-a-vis race and ethnicities, etc. I shall not, and probably media and entertainment. Now, beware of this list. This list, some people would pick one or two or three things out of this. Does not mean to be ethical, you have to exclude all these people. No. Some people would not deal with genetic engineering or genetically modified food or whatever. or companies slaughtering in a certain way meat, nuclear power, pork meat, stem cells. Very interesting to know that. Tobacco and tobacco manufacturing, banking and insurance. And this goes within the bracket of Islamic finance, and I'll tell you why later. Environmental harmful companies or high carbon emission companies. And this is based on a certain transparency of disclosure to know what is the, what we call the carbon footprint of the company. And sometimes we go into human rights and gender equality. And this last line, I put it the last, because this is where you will never reach a settlement criteria. Because, and this we will see in the last slide, when we talk about complete equality. The question is, I would invest in companies who respect human rights and who respect gender equality. Now, what is gender? Is it LGBTQ plus? It's perfect. So how do you make sure you are there? And can you reach a certain point when you have total equality between all people? And just to open a small discussion on that, the real question is, and it's a conjecture that I propose, is there is no such a thing as a total equality in a set. Because I believe that if a set has N members, N stocks or N people or whatever, you have M attributes to apply the equality on them, where M is much bigger than N. I mean, if I want to have 10 people in a manifestation, I want them to represent, say, the Lebanese or 20 or 40 people to represent the Lebanese society, you will never be able to reach total equality with the Lebanese society, because men and women has to be at equal, confessionally equal, and equal, married, unmarried, working, not working. You have a lot of attributes, M attributes, much bigger than N. So you will never be able to reach total equality in that sense. And this is a hindrance in the ethical investment universe. Now, I don't want to dwell into that. Of course, I have sent the presentation to Dr. Razmi, so if he wants to share it with you. But these are the Sharia-compliant industry screening, mostly used today. Now, Dow Jones Islamic, DJIM, FTSE Financial Times, Standard & Poor's, MSCI, HSBC, Amiri, DIB, Azad, Mizan, and just understand that these are some of the criteria that the Sharia boards today impose on the investment strategy to classify it or to describe it or to qualify it as Sharia compliant. And when you see X according to this formula, which means any involvement, hence DGIM and Standard & Poor's and as well as Azad would consider a company not to be compliant, i.e. not belonging to the investment universe, has any involvement in alcoholic beverages. Now, I give you an example. Now, if you go, say, to Carrefour in France or any other Tesco or whatever, and they sell alcohol. Actually, they sell also pork. I think pork production is here. Okay, so this criteria says any involvement with pork production or any involvement with alcoholic beverages, right? Now, if you look at Carrefour, you will see that they sell pork and they sell pork products and they sell alcohol. Now, the question is, the comparison between any involvement, which is this X, and say equal, it means that the core business has to be in alcoholic beverage. What is the definition of core business? That's the question. Is it the percentage in area? Suppose if you go here, say, to any supermarket, big one, and you see, okay, they have a corner for alcohol, but then it's like 5,000 meter squared supermarket with probably 100 or 150 meter squared area for alcohol. So is there a certain ratio of area, or is it income, or is it profit? That's a big criteria here, and it's an elastic decision. And this is what I was saying is, does it really exist intrinsically or per se this kind or, I mean, ethical investment. I just wanted to put Sharia compliance here because I believe that historically, and this is a discussion, interestingly, historically, in the West, what we call the West, they believe that, they believe that ethical investment started in the 19th century, where some Christian devoted members of a certain Christian society wanted to invest, but they had some criteria. No, the question is, this started much before the 19th century. This started at the time where the Islamic jurisprudence started to be applied by the times of the Prophet, peace be upon him. So we believe that this kind of investment, of course, biotechnology at the time did not exist, but at least no investment in alcohol, no investment in gambling, no investment in entertainment, no investment in, you can call it restaurant and bars at the time. Of course, tobacco probably did not exist, but then trade in gold and silver, these are things that to be need to be discussed. But I put this slide for you to understand that Islamic finance or Sharia compliant investment was there much before any other kind of ethical investment that the West claims that it started in the 19th century. I believe it started much before that. Now, the inclusionary screenings or filters can be, what is its debt over equity? If it's an overly indebted company, I wouldn't want to go there, not for financial reasons, but then because if I invest in a company which is highly indebted, highly geared, then I am buying a debt. And this purchase of debt, we can, some cluster of persons, be it Sharia compliant or ethical investment, believe that it is not correct. In general, they would like to examine the quality of liquidity and assets of the income. What is the source of income? You can have a beautiful company, but you need to see where the source of income comes from, so that you can, why? Because you know, the income is, the income to the company is the dividend you make at the end of the period. And if this income is tinted, muassakh, if this income is not good according to your values, then the income you're making, the dividend you're making are not good. So you need to know these things. You need to know what's the value of debt over market cap, probably not over equity, because you would like to know what is the effect on the value of this company and on the price of its stock. Enough of technical things, and I'll move to topic number two. Now look at these questions. I'll keep this slide here so that you, I hope you can read. Of course, this is all copyrighted to those who did it. I mean, I don't pretend to steal from these people, but I take them, I put them here as an illustration. Now, questions. Debate, binary or fuzzy? Binary is yes or no, black and white, zero or one. Fuzzy is things in between, elasticity. So if you read what's happening here between Calvin and Hobbes, apparently the dilemma here is he has to, at school, he has to decide whether he cheats on the test or not. So it's apparently it is binary. I cheat, I do not cheat. And you will discover at the end that he did not cheat and he did not cheat. What he did is he dropped the quiz and went out. So it is fuzzy. And this is a big discussion. And that is why I put you the X and the equal signs in the slide. Because the clear cut, when we say any involvement, this is something impossible to determine. The question becomes, okay, how do I determine that a company does not deal with biotechnology? Well, all right, if you're talking to, say, Holcim, for example, as a company listed in the Lebanese Stock Exchange, which produces cement, well, probably they don't go into biotechnology. But what if we deal with... Pfizer, we're talking about Pfizer today. Are they into biotechnology? Are they into stem cells? Are they into, we need to know. And this is why one of the dilemma or the ethical debate that I would like to open the floor with when I finish these two or three slides is this. Is there a clear cut? In Calvin and Hobbes, in this discussion, they had an ethical discussion on whether I should present the test and cheat, or whether I should present the test and not cheat. Zero or one, cheat, not cheat. And then the argument goes that probably it's okay if I cheat sometimes, probably. And then you will discover that some of these solutions is fuzzy, and the fuzziness in mathematics is a very nice subject to discuss technically and mathematically. Many of you definitely work in fuzzy logic and fuzzy mathematics. Ethical finance or ethical investment for me is fuzzy. It's not binary. It's not yes or no. There is always an elastic boundary that you can stretch or don't stretch. And I'm not saying that you can stretch because you are a hypocrite, not at all. It's because you can stretch or not stretch because it is the value, the moral value that you accept as an ethical investment that you are looking for here. And it's not a clear cut. So this is the first debate. Second debate. Wow. It says here, ACE investment, we have socially correct stocks, but wrong, which means not socially correct, usually pays better, right? So it is risk return versus morally correct. And it is a normative principle. It's a principle of deciding, probably we can call it, what is the cost of ethics that I have to pay? How much of my return I should relinquish or decide not to have, because it says, you know, it's very nice. It says, well, it's okay, it's from cartoon, Shutterstock, whatever. Again, the same disclaimer, but I just borrowed it just to show you what's happening. Because he says, wrong investment, I mean, wrong according to the socially correctness of his criteria, which means non-ethical, whatever it is, it pays better. And this is a huge debate, even in Islamic finance. Now, in Islamic finance, we have had this discussion like probably for the past 25 years when Islamic investment started taking building up momentum. In the sense that, is there a certain price you have to pay as an investor according to the normative principles of Sharia compliance in order to be Sharia compliant? Which means if we are two investors, A and B, and A decides to go Sharia compliant totally in investment, and B wildly open in the market, who makes what and against which risk? And this is a very big debate, and there is no clear-cut answer. I have written several things on this somewhere, and I have showed that, for example, if you take the American market, and I've studied the American market for the past 30 years. And I've discovered that on an average in the American market, you have 13 to 15,000 listed stock at certain year of time, excuse me. And I have discovered that 60% of the market is usually Sharia compliant. According to a criteria, I took two of the criteria, like I took FTSE and I took Standard and Poor and I took MSCI, and I filtered the market, and then I created in hypothetical 1/n portfolio of the whole market and of the Sharia compliant market, and I was unable to reach a conclusion on a null hypothesis to that claim, for example, Sharia compliant is always better in return than non-compliant or vice versa. And I was unable within an acceptable limit of margin of error to decide whether yes or no. So again, back to the fuzziness, but then you have a risk and return versus morally correct. What to choose and when? Because I understand that morally you would like to stick to your values, but then, but wrong usually pays better. So where do you stand? And this is an ethical debate. Now, some pension funds, especially in Europe, a small parenthesis, Europe alone claims 45 to 49% of the whole volume of ethical investment in the world, followed by the US, some 30, 32%. And then you have Japan here, there, and everywhere. Okay. Islamic finance today claims to have between $2.5 and $3 trillion in investment in and it's all Sharia compliant. And it's like 6 to 7%, 8% of the whole, say, ethical market, if you want to call it like this. So it's not still very representative in the world, at least. So this is a debate among these people. Some of them say, listen, especially the pension funds, in Europe, they are extremely, I would say fanatic, or I would say extremely strict is the better word, in applying their moral values. And it's their own moral values. They would say, we do this, we do this, we don't do this, and that's usually three or four or five criteria, not more. But I just compiled several criteria that I found during my readings. Now, look at this. When you go ethical, you say, I want to do good. I want to be a good person, a good citizen, a good, and I want to do well at the same time. So it's like going to hunt. This is hypocritical. The guy is having a beer or a drink with a deer and tell me, listen, my friend, if we happen to meet outside, remember, it's just hunting. What does this mean? Oh, he's doing good by telling him, I mean, his values, but at the end of the day, he said, I need to hunt. And this is in the heart of ethical investment. Ethical investment is not charity. And I'll give you an example now on Philip Morris after one slide, probably I'm finishing in one slide or two. Now, this is a utility criteria in investment. How much of my utility criteria I'm clipping so as to do good and do well at the same time. And this is different from the risk return, the slide that we had before with the wrong can do better. It is more than correctness. I am correct, but I'm telling you, I'm going out to hunt. And if I'm going to hunt and I see you, I'm going to hunt you. So where is morality and where is ethics here? This is a question, of course, not about hunting. Probably there's a controversy about, around this, but at the end of the day, you are faced with two things. I want to do well, which means money, pecuniary. I invest 1,000 and I'm expecting 8%. But you want to do good in the sense that I invest in something good and I feel good about it. But you feel good about it usually ex ante, not ex post, the moment you invest. And this is the utility criteria I want to stress. Ex ante, before you invest, you put your criteria to your investment manager or to yourself who you're investing. And then, oh, you feel great when you invest according to your values. Then you wait ex post to see if you did well, which means how much return you did. So this is two feelings, I would say, two satisfactions, two charges. One of them is ex ante and one of them is ex post and the other one is ex ante. Ex post, I want to do good. In fact, before hunting, he's telling him, listen, my friend, if we happen to meet outside, please remember we're hunting, right? And then ex post, when he feels probably he did hunt him or hunt his family, whatever, to this deer and you know what's the final outcome. Now, the last thing about it is that there's a huge dilemma. This is called the trolley dilemma or the train dilemma. And what is it all about? You are this poor guy here on the lever. And you know, if you move the lever to one side, the trolley or the train would go to the right or to the left. So on one side, you have one guy. Some of the images, they put the guy as tied with ropes to the rails, anyway. And on the other, there are five guys. So you have to decide whether you sway the trolley to the right of the image and only you sacrifice one guy, or you sway it to the left and sacrifice five guys. And there's a criteria here. And this is a big ethical dilemma. And how much harm is harmful? So, okay, the question is that I'm framing you in a situation when you have to kill one or five. Most of you would say, no, I will stop the train, or I will derail the train, or I will not play the game. This is part of it. Yeah. In the game theory, part of it is not playing the game. But if you engage in the game, i.e. if you want to invest, you will be faced ethically with this dilemma. Each and every day in your investment, how much harm would you accept or would you not accept against your risk and return? And this is a dilemma that you're going to live as an investor each and every day, unless you are not ethically oriented. And a lot of funds are not ethically oriented. They don't care. They just look at the numbers, say, I buy Bitcoin or I buy Johnny Walker. Or, I mean, you understand. So this is the big dilemma. How much harm is harmful if you have to choose? And you are playing the game. Again, say, listen, damn it to hell, I don't want to play this game. I don't want to kill people. You just turn around and let the train go, whatever, explode somewhere. But if you are engaging in the game as a game theory, you are compelled to make a decision at a certain moment of time. And this is very much into a political economy. And this, we have it each and every day. Yesterday, we were faced with an ethical debate here in Lebanon, when how much harm is harmful? Who should we be vaccinating and why? Yeah, that was an ethical debate on how much harm and harmful. And I personally have no answer on that. I'm just receiving information still on that. But this is part of this debate because you are playing the game, right? Because you decided to play the game. Hence, is it by definition, if you play the game of investment, you are going to cause harm? And then the real criteria or the real message or the real game would be, what should you do to play the game in the less harmful possible way, right? That can be a question, but this is an ethical question. I don't have an answer to that. And some of you would say, listen, if I am investing and then therefore I'm creating harm, how am I creating harm? Where, if you invest in any production company in Lebanon or elsewhere, you are like creating carbon emission. You're helping carbon emission. You're helping inequality in the market. I mean, I can give you a list of harms and small harms. So how much harm are you willing to accept to the society or to the environment or to your moral values in order to play the game? Or should you decide not to play the game? This is a big question. Is it an option not to play the game in an investment world? It's a big dilemma. These are my final thoughts to open the debate for those of you. Ethical investment and political or activist cause. Look at this. If you buy a share of Philip Morris is the company that makes tobacco, Marlboro, whatever. If you buy this share because you're seeking a place as a shareholder to try to get a resolution to stop production of cigarettes and donate the asset to cancer, well, this is not investment. This is activism. We are talking about investment that you're going to put money somewhere where you think it is morally accepted by you according to your values. So we should put a clear cut between activism, right, and that I am against totally, like those companies, for example, who kill the bison and produce fur. But I will not go and invest there to stop the company, because then it will not be considered as an investment because it is activism. So we are not talking about activism. However, the real question is diversification. Because you are excluding, you are not investing in some sectors, not only companies, in some sectors. I understand when you're an investor, you have 100 companies and you choose where to put your money because you read the fundamentals, you read their balance sheets, you say this is better, this has a better corporate governance, that has a better market, blah, blah, blah. No, I'm saying here you are excluding sectors. Like for example, Islamic finance, we do not invest in banking and insurance. And if you go to the United States as a market cap, banking and insurance is almost one third of the market. or 25% of the market. So you're immediately chopping off 25% of the market because of this one single criteria. Hence, this is opposed to diversification. The less options you have, the less diversification you have. Hence, portfolio is derived from a concentrated universe. And this is where the whole issue is, concentration. Is there, therefore, such a thing as total deconcentration or total equality? My question is no. And because I conjecture that there is no total equality or zero inequality in any set or subset around, I believe that ethical finance or ethical investment as such is hindered by the issue of diversification or concentration. And again, this is what I promise you, that it's going to be like part of our discussion. Price of ethics in an investment, is it a possible underperformance? So would you be relinquishing, giving away some of your profits, 1.5% per year, just to be ethical? And these are the debates I want to open. Thank you for your attention. I'm sorry if I've been like a bit technical on some things.
Thank you very much. This is very interesting, especially because I just wrapped up an ethics course yesterday. And in a way, I tried to point out similar conclusions to yours, but then I'll refrain from saying anything for now because I have personally so many questions. Yeah, before I ask any questions, is anyone interested in or has any question to ask? I think someone before already posted something.
Oh, I'm sorry. Probably I could.
Don't worry. I'll read the questions for you so that those who will.
I'm sorry.
It's fine. Is there any ethics scale or rating or index or anything of the sort?
Oh yeah. We have a lot of ethics scales. I showed you some. Criteria for Islamic finance, but now we have what we call rating, ethical rating. It started like in last century with what we call the Sullivan scale. However, Sullivan himself later disaccredited his own scale because, you know, the criteria are every now and then, but yesterday you can have a rating on ethical rating according to criteria. How compliant, how much did you stick to your ethical values, and how much the companies you've chosen are sticking to your values? Because, you know, you choose a company. Suppose one of your ethical values, or let's say for sake of discussion, the only ethical value you have is carbon footprint, carbon contamination, environment. And you invest in like 25, 30, 40 companies, whatever, that are really zero carbon emission. But this, you know, the companies are living, are working. Probably after 6 months, two of these companies start producing something, whatever it is, that is producing carbon. Even milk produces carbon because, you know, the cows, when they go to the toilet, they produce a methane, which we believe is environmentally harmful. So you need to have not only a rating, and ratings exist, but also you need to have a certification so that you can follow. And now we agree that twice a year is enough. But I believe once a year is enough because it's very costly to go and keep on certifying the companies.
I think a follow-up question which Faour weighed in on, is there any ethical or ethical rating, does it have an impact like your carbon ratio? I'm not sure
I understood.
Yeah.
I'm happy to meet Dr.
Can Fowler. I explain it? Can I explain it, Doctor?
Yeah, sure.
Companies have to abide, you have a certain carbon quota. You know, if you don't cross it, you win credits. If you cross it, you have to. you're penalized for that. And this is like all over Europe, right? There is this carbon.
Gender equality.
You got me right. Is there anything with ethics that, I mean, there is a certain level? This is why I asked if there is any index or.
Yes, there is a level in carbon.
How can you quantify it? It's because it's, if you don't quantify it, it's like you can play with it left and right, and you can manipulate it and make it either ethical or not, and then it's lost.
Yeah, you are right. No, yes, there is a what we call a cutoff criteria in everything. There is a cutoff criteria, and the funny thing about it is that whatever they agree upon, be it cubic meter per year or they transform it into another scale, is a cutoff criteria. What happens usually, and this is where things are becoming to be more proactive, but at the same time more dangerous. I tell you why. Because before, like, say, starting the 90s or 80s, don't quote me on the year, say we are all investors, suppose, on a fund called Marketplace Stokes Fund. And we agree that our criteria for carbon emission is 3 over 10, whatever 3 over 10 is. So we pick those companies, put them in our portfolio, everybody's happy. Well, nowadays, what is happening is the portfolio manager writes to these companies, says, "Dear sir, sir, and sir, and sir, we are an ethical fund. We invest ta, 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 and we have invested in your company because you are carbon friendly, whatever. Please beware that if you exceed this level, we will de-invest." And de-investing, when you have a pension fund, for example, I've had the chance to work with one of these pension funds in Holland. They have 400 billion euros in assets under management. And if they put 10 billion in 5 or 6 companies, when they de-invest, they can create a big problem with the companies. And this is becoming the dictatorship of ethical investment.
Hamad is asking, I think in light of what you said about not investing in banking in the US, on what grounds? Is it because of interest rates, or is there any other reason why the Islamic finance doesn't prefers not to invest in banking?
Yeah, Islamic Sharia compliance, all of the tariqa or all of the screening method agree that investing in banks is twice harmful. One, because all the income or most of the income comes from interest-bearing operations, which is doomed to be non-ethical or haram, if you want to call it like this. And second, especially when you deal with insurance, insurance is considered to be gambling at a certain amount of time because you are playing on the probability of an event happening or not. And it's the same profile as I wish I could draw it, same profile as in a lottery, in the sense that when you have an event, the insurance company pays. When you don't have an event, the insurance company takes your money. And they believe that this is like gambling or similar to gambling. And the Sharia compliant criteria do not agree on investing in banks, conventional banks, of course, commercial banks, not Islamic banks, and insurance companies.
Okay, so before I let Thaour jump in, I have a question as someone who doesn't know absolutely anything about all this, because you mentioned something about probability and gambling and the likelihood that an event might happen or not. Isn't, if I can argue based on the problem of induction, that absolutely anything we do in life is basically gambling, because we're always betting by making any choice, choosing a degree, choosing a business, choosing anything. This is basically based on the likelihood of it happening or it taking me somewhere else, etc. So what I'm trying to say here is that in this sense, why is it considered wrong? Like in a way, we really are gambling in our lives. Every single day, the moment we leave our house, we're basically in a way gambling, you know?
Far from the epistemology of the word gambling, let me restate the game.
Okay.
Any game you play, and now we will project this on investment or on business. Any game you play, if you know the outcome beforehand, no, one of the two players will not play it. If we're gonna have a football match and I know that I'm gonna lose, I'm not playing. Right. So if we go, let's go basic. If we go on a partnership together just to buy these shirts and sell them on the streets. Now, there's a big probability that we lose money. This probability exists. And this is part of the Sharia compliant condition of work, which is, if you want to, I mean, if you know it, it is called Al-Ghunm Bil-Ghurm. Al-Ghunm, profit, Bil-Ghurm, from risk. So we all agree that if we know the outcome beforehand, we'll not play the game. Now, as far as lottery is concerned, your investment is not proportional at all to the amount of money you win in case you get this minute infinitesimal probability of winning. One, and second, you are not investing in a productive operation to be able to ethically say that you, this production for you was the fruit of the $2 or $1 that you've invested. So we believe, I mean, Sharia compliance believe, because we're dealing with ethical, it is not ethical to be gaining from the loss of everybody, because, you know, in a lottery, theoretically, if I pay a dollar, you pay a dollar, everybody pays a dollar for a ticket, and I win, I am winning the loss of all the others, or a fraction of it, right? Whereas when we buy shirts, you and I, and we sell them in the street, and we make profit, we have made profit not from the loss of other, because the other guy who bought the shirt, right, is using it. So he also has, it is a win-win situation. And this is where the difference is. And if you want to go technical, this is called zero-sum game in a game theory. If any operation is zero-sum game, it is not ethical, even not only for Sharia compliance, also for ethical investment. So zero-sum game are not compliant. This is basically the explanation.
Yes, and before I ask the questions, Faour had something to say or ask.
Yeah. Hi, Ghassan.
Hi, Habibi.
Okay, so it's more of a food for thought rather than a question. Now, with investment companies, when we talk about ethics, let's talk about one very narrow example, and as far as corporate, quote unquote, corporate ethics is concerned, which is companies that are carbon conscious or environmentally conscious. Now, you have a lot of companies that engage in what is called greenwashing, essentially, where companies essentially pretend to be environmentally conscious by doing a few symbolic things in as far as environmental consciousness is concerned, but in reality, they're not as environmentally conscious as they would, as they are trying to portray themselves as. So is this really about ethics, or is it about the perception of ethics? So you're really, as a company, you're trying to tell the investor that you're ethical. You're trying to give them these signals of being ethical. Basically, you're giving them the perception of being ethical when you are not in reality being ethical. So what are we talking about here? Ethics or the perception of ethics?
I agree with you. This is fraud, at least for those morally oriented to go really into what is included into ethical investment as far as carbon footprint is concerned. I believe this is fraud. Now, this is where I concatenate this with the question that came before. Do you have a rating or do you have a certification on that? It's exactly the same when you go to the market today here in Beirut and you find like a box of eggs and they say, oh, this is free range, whatever, organically, and it might not be. This is fraudulent. The issue around this, yes, I understand. If you are the investor or the investment manager and you are behind a perception Well, that's probably because your clients just want like a tin or a small facade of ethics, or this is the amount of ethics they trust or believe. But actually, this is like within the practice of the business or of the trade on a daily basis. If you are really certified, then some funds would accept you as green, and if you're in between, probably people would try to avoid you. But I agree with what you say.
Am Saidam is has let me go over it. I think the question of Jamil had an other ramification. Can there be in ethical companies like with Carbon ability to be rewarded for their excess ethical that could eventually be traded and bought for those who are not just up to the standard of ethicality, that would have the advantage, like with Carbon, to realize the true cost of non-ethical companies. Coal emits 2 MT of carbon, $80 to be offset, etc. So like the reason coal in reality is 120.
Today, the quota of carbon emission is sold. And there is a market of that. This is very much into the energy market. And there is a market for, if I am allowed, say, to produce 10 tons, 10 metric cube, and I've produced 4, and I have the right to produce 6 more, and you want to produce 3 more, I can sell you 3 more. And there is a warrant based on that. There's an option based on that. And there is a future contract based on that. Now, it is a tradable, I would say, commodity today, carbon emission. Yes, it is happening big time.
Isn't this unethical? I mean, let me tell you my, like, based on my very humble background in finance, because I have, like, I studied finance before I switched to philosophy. And then I went back and started thinking about the entire point of finance and how things are being done. And for me, this is like the actual question that I'm always asking myself. And it's a discussion that we've been having throughout the entire, throughout the course. It's like, what's the point of ethics in this case, right? Because we can always get to a point whereby I can argue this is ethical, this is unethical. And we can always start debating, you know, absolutism versus relativism. This is good, this is bad. What you're wrong is my right, and my right is your wrong, right? If I assume that this is good and this is bad. So ultimately, why do we care so much about it? Or what are the grounds on which we decide? Like I'm proposing a morally nihilist kind of perspective, right? It's like, why the hell do we care?
I'm very happy.
Do whatever works, you know. Yeah. It's if this is good for us, let it be.
I'm very happy you brought this up. This is part of the discussion. And this is part of the debate, that is there anything as such called ethical or not? Now, if you look at this slide that I have, which is the first one, it is about investment rather about ethics than profit. It's about profit being ethical and not ethical with profit. This is the big question. So if I am allowed to produce 100 kilograms of garbage per week in this building, suppose this is the quota, and I live alone, and I have a neighbor who has 10 guys, 10 kids, and they produce 150, and I produce only 30, between us together, we are below the average of 100 per family. And this is the logic, which is acceptable in a sense, in a utility sense of the word, but probably not acceptable in the absolutist sense that you just said. You should not be producing more than 100 kilograms per garbage, full stop. Now, but then we go back to the initial, and it's becoming cyclical argument in ethical investment. I wanna invest. So we are starting with, I have money, I have value, I wanna invest it. However, I want my conscience to be at ease because my values, I have a set of values, whatever they are, be it Sharia compliant, be it environmentalist, be it inclusivistic, being whatever you, anti-Franquista, whatever you like, right? And at the same time, I want to produce profit. So I want my profit to come to be originated from those activities who do not go against my set of values. Now, how much is it, zero or one? This is the big question. And I agree with you, being a nihilista, being an nihilist in this sense is, I do whatever I want to do as long as it is an investment. Probably there is the opposite of it. I do nothing because anything I do is harmful. You see, this is where the anything I do as far as investment, of course, we're talking, is harmful in the sense that I should not be squeezing even one orange because whatever I do to live, I'm going to produce garbage. So if I am an absolutist, I don't want to produce garbage. I'm not sure how you're going to do it, right? Or the other way around. Listen, I need to survive to hell. Is it 100 kilogram of garbage or 100 tons of garbage? I'm surviving. I have 10 kids. And this is a big question. And this is where ethical criteria comes. I agree with you totally. And this is why when we spoke together initially and we decided, is there such a thing as ethical with a clear cut? I totally
agree. Jad is asking, and I think these are considered the maxims or principles of ethics. Why is the whole ethical investment discussion framed as doing no harm and excluding sectors instead of framing it as an approach of finding companies that generate positive value and social impact?
That's brilliant. But then if look at the last two words that produce, again, can you just read to me that produce what? The last two words that he mentioned.
Generate positive value and social impact.
All right. Positive value, it's investment, has nothing to do with, but if we go to, is a tobacco company producing positive value and social impact? Positive social impact. That's a big question. If you believe so, you invest in it. That is why there is no universal list that says, this investment is bad, this investment, that doesn't exist because it is a very subjective criteria, right? Probably, listen to that. Some people would say, I would only invest in tobacco companies because those tobacco companies, for example, are giving works to those Aborigines or indigenous people in Latin America who, if they don't work in tobacco and produce this tobacco, they would be like guerrillas or whatever. I'm not sure. Put the criteria you want. And he believes that investing in such a company produces positive social impact. Well, fair enough, because this is the set of value he trusts and he believes. I agree. Listen, we were discussing 5 minutes ago the carbon the carbon footprint, and well, it comes after Kyoto Convention, and the United States withdrew from this, and they just re-entered with the new president. So to tell you that this is not, even this is not a clear-cut criteria.
Yep. So the discussion is ongoing, I think, when it comes. For someone, Trump was ethical, rejecting.
But I mean, excuse me.
Go ahead.
Sorry if I'm interrupting. I'm deceived. I'm somehow deceived because it's a subject that you have been working on for many years. And to reach a point, I don't know if we have reached this point, but to say that it's still vague or unquantifiable or we don't know how to grasp it or to measure it or to classify according to it or to use it as one of the criteria or ponderation in our decision-making. It's frustrating to me. I'm just saying it's frustrating. Aren't we there? Aren't we at a point where we have at least a set of measurement or a set of classification or whatever that, yes, that we can start saying we are approaching a certain quantification, or we are really taking ethics into consideration, and that's it.
Jamil, I totally understand you. Listen, I come from an engineering background. I'm an engineer at my initial trade, and I believe in quantities, in measurements, in volumes, in heights, in weights, in volts and amperes. I agree with you. Now, yes, we have it quantifiable. However, suppose I want to know what is the distance between your position now and my position. We are, both of us, we are agreeing on 1 meter or 1 kilometer or 1 centimeter being the basis of the measurement. Now, when we deal with ethics, and that is why I mentioned this binary or fuzzy, you are not dealing with clear-cut criteria. However, when you build your own criteria, you, Jamil, as an investor, and you say, I am going to invest in carbon emission less than X, then you can measure and quantify it. I totally agree with you that it has to be quantifiable and measurable. But sometimes, I'm not saying that ethical investment is something that is mature and that is not like improving or changing or being mutating, if you want. It's like those doctors who work with a cancer cure. And we have seen people spending their lives in research to reach a certain day. For a solution. Now, I'm sorry, did I interrupt?
I think it can be quantified, and I think we should not follow the same measurement for every industry, meaning every country. For example, we would not be stressing on any child labor in the US because there is no child labor in the US, whereas in other countries, let's say China, India, there might be. And so penalty on those in those countries is much higher. It's negligible in the US. Same, for example, if we're talking about renewable energy sector, there should be some indicators that are related to industries or countries or points of interest that we calculate or ponderate in certain industries or companies differently than others. I don't know if you got me, but we need to branch out and not really say there is one measure of ethics that we can use across.
But listen, let me ask you the question. Allow me to revert back as an answer with a question. This happened a lot in the city where I grew up in Tripoli. I used to go and ask, when Bank Arabi, like, when the city afraid? So you see, you have to answer that with a question. Now, let's take the child employment that you mentioned, brilliantly mentioned. And yes, of course, in the US, it is negligible or non-existing because of many criteria laws, and in India or in Pakistan or in Bangladesh, it exists. Now, the question is, why don't you go, like we say in Spanish, tranquilo, forget the whole business and invest only in the US? Suppose that your only criteria for ethical investment is not employing children. I mean, I'm just isolating the question. Right.
You're making it simple. Sure.
Why don't you go and invest only in the US? Why should you go be looking at India and Pakistan? Oh, because probably if you look at the US market, again, the utility, how much is good, how much is bad? The whole market in the US is producing probably 2-3%, 4% maximum. If you go to Pakistan, probably it's producing 15% with it. So, is it possible for you to go to certain places and certify the business, the industry, the sector as being ethically compliant to your criteria and invest there and look at this holy grail in investment that all investors are looking for, which is the small alpha, what we call a small alpha investment that gives you an edge over the market? However, you might be faced with this. And this, again, the fuzziness. Fuzziness is a mathematical concept. Actually, it's not a word that I've invented. In that, if your criteria is, Dupuy, any company employing children is banned from my portfolio, probably you won't find any company in India. For example, probably, I'm not claiming that I know the Indian market. However, if you say, I would only invest in those companies that do not employ more than 1% of their workforce in children, probably you would include 10, 15% of the market. And the more you stretch this membrane of acceptance of yours, fuzziness, it's not zero and one, the more inclusive of companies you are. And this is the ethical criteria. And this is where the management goes. And here I agree with you. Measure this. You measure the amount of permissiveness, the osmosis you would allow, the permeability of inclusion of companies according to a certain threshold, I would call it. So this threshold is positively measurable because it is quantifiable. You can say, I would not accept companies who employ 2-3x% of, or I would only accept those companies who emit less than 3.7 metric cubic metric per day, per week, per whatever. Yes, you have numbers, definitely, and you have certification for that. Like when you invest in finance, you would say, I would only invest in those companies whose debt over equity is less than 1/3. So you see, you have a criteria and you follow this criteria with the fundamentals of the company. Once his debt over equity becomes more than 1/3, you disinvest. So it is measurable, it is quantifiable, but then your portfolio at the end of the period, say after 1 year you reevaluate, is either compliant or non-compliant. Now what happens, this is the good question, that you just passed by it, but you mentioned it. What happens when after 1 year I discover that one or two or three of the companies went beyond the compliance boundary that I've put? You have two formula. After disinvesting, one of the formulas, for example, Sharia compliance said whatever incomes was derived from these companies should be depurated from your income. You put them aside, you give them to charity. But some other ethical...
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Of those companies, yes, of course. Some other ethical criteria, including some Maliki's schools of thought, they say, no, we depurate the amount of profit that was created by this excess of transbordering the limit, and the rest we keep it, because if this is what I accept as compliant and the guy went that much, so I need only this to depurate, not all this. And this is a criteria. At the end of the day,
the marginal, you decide... So it's the marginal increase in profit that is...
Is it measurable?
Yeah. Okay, I got you. Yeah.
Is it measurable? We don't know. Sometimes it is not, because sometimes you say, had it not been for transgression of the boundary, he wouldn't have produced any profit. You know,
let me also, sorry, weigh in on this, because the point that you mentioned is also important, and that's something that I think Jamil and others need to be aware of. It's on the one hand, so we're talking about different criteria, right? Different ethical criteria, and the assumption here is that different countries, different societies, different companies have different cultures, and usually within ethical debates, there is always this absolutist versus relativist discussion, right? Is there such a thing as universal ethics? And can we access universal ethics by thinking rationally about it, or by using reason on the one hand, or by some other methods that we can apprehend, or that we can use in order to apprehend these ethics?
And this is where localism of Nassim comes in.
We can discuss that. But before that, I just need to make the point, because to point out where the problem comes in. which you touched upon, and I think it needs, or it's worth pointing out again. But it's not only the absolutist versus the relativist, because the idea here is to what we're talking about policymakers on the one hand, if we're talking about the same country, or we're talking about, as Dr. Shammas said, investing in other markets, maybe emerging markets, etc., versus the US because of return, etc. Who are you to impose your criteria on them? And if you're imposing your criteria on them, then you're kind of, in a way, echoing some sort of colonialist approach, right? Within Western ethics, this is very problematic. And so, for example, up to what extent would you impose on other countries something that they consider normal or ethical, right? This is one. Two, within the same country, if you have different groups and different values, etc., how are you going to be issuing a criteria by virtue of which every other company, or by saying, you know what, if you don't comply by this, then you're unethical. Same applies for, in this case, carbon emission as well. On what grounds are you going to be arguing that this is how it should be? And whether, and this is one question, and the other question is, does it have to do with ethics? And this is where I'm constantly struggling, because why do we decide that we have to go green? Is it because we decide we have to go green on ethical grounds or on other grounds that we deem is necessitates that we go green? So I myself am struggling also with this question, like you are, because philosophically speaking, you will never get any answer.
Absolutely.
So this is at least my kind of point when it, yeah, so survival grounds, but this is the thing, like how do these criteria, so the criteria changes, right? Now everyone is going green because supposedly global warming, etc. Okay, fine. But then how are we going to be dealing with it? And is it based on ethical grounds, or are we just saying, you know, because I can argue, okay, in 50 years, 100 years time, mind you, hypothetically, you know, if I am just a nihilist, you know, if I am a nihilist, I would say future generations can die. Like, I don't care about future generations. Climate change, I don't care about climate change. Not because I'm denying it, there is climate change. I don't care about, why should I care about future generations? You know, so I can show up and say that. So is it ethics, or what are we trying to, you know, ultimately? So this is what I'm struggling with personally. Yeah, because there's a question before. Sorry, I think I, Jad is asking if COVID crisis create more appetite among investors towards ethical investment? What is the role of investors in creating a more sustainable world? Are investors even aware of such a role?
Wow, this is very deep. I have had a conference. I gave a conference in Rotterdam, in Erasmus University, of course, through such platforms, in investment post-COVID. And my conclusions, these are debatable, akid, yani, it's not like this is the holy grail, is that more localism in investment is gonna be seen, because, you know, when you close the borders, when you close everything, I mean, sometimes you will not find a biscuit in the market. So you need to invest in those companies who are able to provide to your market, to the market you're interested in, products that are sought after. Which brought me to the conclusion in answer to our friend Jad, that neoliberalism as a model, as a standalone model, is gonna change, or has ended, probably, this is what I think, has ended with COVID. There is no such a thing anymore as these big whales companies that produce huge things in countries, and they shift the profit to their place, but they send you the product, they put you under debt, and then you start struggling with paying back by buying more. And, you know, it's, somebody wrote on this last time, and this is my take, but this is open to debate. Now, the second part of him, of his question, are the investors aware? Yes, but listen to this. Investors usually, because they are investors, try to ride the wave. Don't ever think, an investor, he's like this charitable saint to say, oh, COVID. No. What an investor would do, he would see, if can I buy vaccines and bring into Lebanon or to Iraq or to Bangladesh or to Myanmar and make some profit? Again, look at the first one. Ethical investment and political activism, they go one against the other because you are first interested in investing. But this is not that I'm preaching this, but I'm telling you, this is what is ethical investment all about. And this is what Dr. Resmi just said. Why should I care? This is one of the questions. Why should I care about future generation? And this is a big debate in Japan, where there are a lot of restrictions and regulations on fishery companies that go in the open ocean and they fish for tuna and whatever. Okay, there are strict restrictions on the weight they can fish, the volume of the fish they catch, and the nature. I mean the species. If they catch a dolphin, it's like a genocide for them, dolphin side for them. So why? Because they are caring for future generation, and this has been a debate there. Why should I care? I'm gonna fish for tuna because the consumption of tuna fish in Japan is around 7 to 8 million tons per year, whatever. And I need to provide these for the people. And this is a big debate. I agree with you.
And there was a discussion before, a question about electrical vehicles. Are they investment is where I cannot find the question here. Like, are they ESG considered?
ESG, like
environmental, social, and governance.
Socially and governance.
Yeah.
You cannot say that. Like, you cannot say that it's an industry or a sector of industry is ESG. Probably when you go ESG, you have to go company by company. I give you an example. Elon Musk produces Tesla cars. And lately he has invested $150 billion in buying Bitcoin. And this has stirred a huge debate. Is this ethical or not? Is he deriving his money from selling Tesla cars? And why is the market cap of his company so big with so low of a sale? This is a criteria. Hala, if you go to qualify the environmental friendliness of electric cars, probably I believe they are environmental friendly. The car, is the company producing them environmental friendly? I'm not sure. What are the processes that they use to be environmental friendly, or how much from 1 to 100 are they environmental friendly? At the end of the day, the car has tires, and those tires are like caoutchouc, and they have grease. There is a criteria. Now, is it more environmental friendly than a diesel car? Probably, yes. Or any other car or vehicle that uses fossil fuel? Probably in absolute terms, it is, but it's open to debate. I mean, the car might be more environmental friendly. I'm not sure about the company producing it.
And also, I want to point out another thing, because it sometimes is like these discussions might seem to be irrelevant when as they are happening. But I can always give you, like, you can always look at it in retrospect and figure out or think to yourself, oh, shit, we effed up at one point in time, right? So, for example, right, ethical values change and stuff like that. But just do a quick survey of how, let's say, during ancient Greece, Plato and Socrates, right? They were having all these discussions about what ethics is, but then at the same time, slavery was okay, right? Up until later in time, no? recent times in the US, they still had slavery laws and it was okay. So you think back in time, well, what happened? Where did this switch happen from us thinking that slavery is okay to now thinking that slavery is not okay? Well, debates and people have been considering these issues. And maybe back in the day, some people were thinking, you know what, these debates are useless or futile. So this is also where the struggle comes in, because we might not know what now, what kind of unethical stuff we are doing or what might be considered in the future unethical, but then we need to try to consider all these options and all these options with regards to any kind of debate. Like yesterday, again, we were discussing, you know, sex robots, right? So there are companies that are producing sex robots, and the author of the article was arguing, insofar as we give robots, a sophisticated AI, a legal status within a country, if I would want to invest in this company, I would want these robots to be able to give consent for sex. So this is one kind of aspect of discussing these issues. Like, why the hell, someone might show up and say, why the hell are we discussing sex and robots and stuff? Well, because we need to explore these options before we get stuck in something, right? So to try to, as much as possible, to figure out where we're heading. So to take it back to what you're discussing here, why green energy, why sustainable? Well, maybe it seems to be better in the long run, I don't know. But the question would be, is it ethical, or is it based on ethical grounds or things that might, you know, do no harm to the environment, or because there's an ongoing discussion about whether electrical vehicles are actually carbon friendly in that sense or not. So
I agree, probably you would validate the pun if I say that I totally agree that ethical concept or conceptualization depends on the vector of time. And for that matter, it is relativistic, forgive the pun, in the sense that it is, you are ethical relative to a set of criteria that are widely acceptable today. Yep. among all of us, because you just said that probably in the time of Socrates and Thucydides, whatever, they used to have slavery. And listen, you have also, like today, for example, if you say, I want equitable gender employment, you will be very much amazed or astonished to see that there is no total equal gender employment, even in the best of the, what we call the first world or the Western world. Not only men, women, but if you expand the gender definition to what is acceptable today as LGBTQ plus whatever it is, probably you will find that no one is gender equitable. And this is why, in my conjecture, and I've been debating this for the past 10 years, as a conjecture by itself, total equality does not exist. Even in the, I would say, in the more, even in the more materialistic sense, like income, for example, there is no such a thing as total equality in anything. And this brings me back to what Mr. Jamil said. There is a certain relative measure in probably your measurement would be how much total equality you have achieved in such an ethical criteria. And you might define it as a genie or a bourguignon or any, or probably you would use what is very much in vogue today. You would use entropy measure, like minus x log of p, whatever you like. I agree on that.
Ayush has a question raised.
Yes. Hello?
Yep.
Yeah. See, my question is, right now in India, about 200 million people are undernourished. About half the women of reproductive age are anemic. And about 1 in 5 children are underweight, don't have adequate food. In such a situation, how does ethics dictate that we focus on clean energy more? we talk about companies that are focusing on carbon emission mode, rather than telling people how do we survive now? How do we reconcile the here and now, my survival for the next week, and the survival of this planet for the next 50, 100,000 or any number of years? Just that's the question.
Oh, I totally,
how do I reconcile the two?
I totally agree. And this is what Dr. Rasmi was saying a minute ago. I totally agree with you. What can be a criteria for a society is a destructive criteria for other. And that is why my presentation's title is, does such a thing exist? And I agree with you. While I am sitting, suppose, in Los Angeles or in Helsinki or wherever you want to call it, oh no, we would like our children to be more than 21 years. You come with real indication that says half of the children are malnourished, and if they don't work, they don't eat. Then this becomes ethical to give them work, food, shelter. Now you tell me what kind of work would they carry weights? I'm not sure. How many hours they work per day, probably you would like to,
but see,
to modulate this in order this to make it acceptable.
And this is why, and I'll thank you very much for the question. And that's exactly why it's important to point these issues out, because this is where the universalism comes in, and where echoes or the specter, as Marx would say, the specter of colonialism would be hovering around us, right? Why do we only care about, without saying, like, we're not saying this is good or this is bad or absolute, but it's as you said, why do we focus only on one kind of criteria or one value? Yeah, and so far as it's green, I don't care that many millions of peoples are malnourished or don't have enough food or money, etc. Right? So yeah, you're right. And this is welcome to ethics. Like when where does it stop being or actually us caring about ethics, and where does it start being us trying to impose our values on others, and how are we going to be understanding others as well to understand where they are coming from and how, what set of values and what problems they're facing? This is something that even NGOs, I think, and all these people who are working in this domain are constantly facing. Whom are we going to be helping? Should we help? And I think Suhad, what we were discussing this yesterday, should we be helping? Which kind of group should we be helping? You have, in the case of Lebanon, refugees, you have rural areas, you have women, you have all sorts of categories. And the discussion is, whom are we going to be helping if given certain allocation or certain resources, right? So yeah, it's a very tough question, but this is precisely why we need to discuss these issues and think about these issues, because it's not only the measurement that is important, it's also us being aware of the values of other people and the criteria and the sources of these values. Where are they getting these values from? And how can we build maybe perhaps bridges to reach some sort of common grounds to begin with? But yeah, I don't know. Final words?
I leave the ground open for anyone who would like to conclude or to give his final words. My final words are very, very simple. I believe that ethical finance is a subjective. Ethical investment, I'm sorry, is a very subjective criteria and can sometimes be hypocritical in the sense that if you believe in gender equality, no company would be investing, for example, in Saudi Arabia.
This is, yeah.
I mean, I'm being probably sarcastic a bit, but I mean no harm in the sense that any ethical criteria not involving gender equality is missing from your investment criteria. However, I wouldn't understand how would you be investing in such places. The same, I revert back to what Mr. Chube said, that, okay, you would not like to employ underage, let me say, to not say children. And then you just deem that 300 100 million kids would not be able to get their daily sustainable food.
Which is also the same problem here, right? We have many, many, many kids find themselves forced to work because they need to support their families because they are poor.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And my final thought is, it is fuzzy. Fuzzy in the sense that مرحلة بين المرحلتين. It's like a place among, it's like, it's not heaven, it's not hell, it's purgatory. It's barzakh, if you want to call it that way. Well, yeah, it's fuzzy, it's somewhere in between. And the criteria is elastic, this is a conclusion, is relativistic upon time and the era where we are. And sometimes it needs to be more measurable and more quantifiable to be able at least to compare between A, B, and C portfolio.
And yeah, I think a bit more, or just maybe to, because you mentioned that this is where Nassim's localism comes in and the issue of scalability. So we need to understand the different groups, the survival and the scalability, that what works for some might not work for others, and then what works at certain scale might not work on a larger scale. So yeah, at least I hope that first off, I want to thank you for this. For me, it was very, very interesting. And if people are left more confused about ethics, this is great.
It worked.
This is ultimately the entire point, right? Because we need to start considering these issues because it's not easy. And we need to start incorporating this even more, especially when it comes to economics and investments and stuff like that. Not because it's applicable or not, it's just we need to start thinking about this. At least this is what I personally think. So yeah, thank you very much. And thank you all for joining and tuning in. And yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you, I appreciate it. I was honored actually to have such a cultured audience, and thank you for giving me this platform. I congratulate you on that.